Meringue.
Dusty Bun?
Dusty Hera.
I've been really busy. I'm trying to save the world from Russians and monsters.
This is Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and Portland's sports leader.
Of course you have.
1080.
I want to hear it.
The Fan.
Reach the stars. Fly a fantasy.
Hour number two, Danny and Dusty with you on this Thursday afternoon. Coming up 1 hour from now, we'll be talking about our picks, the NFL picks for week four of the National Football League, coming in hot at 2 o'clock.
Bum, 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 bum.
Yeah, stinky lines across the board.
They're not good.
Yeah, not great, Bob. Not great, Bob. And big favorites have been even worse.
Yeah.
They've been really bad this year. We'll dive into that coming up at the top of next hour. We're staying on the web coming up at 1:30 today. Where we start this second hour is, I was surprised, to say the least, when I saw this pop up. It came to us from the Sports Illustrated Oregon Ducks, SI, Oregon Ducks on SI. I think Bree Amaranthus, doesn't she run that?
I think so.
Yeah, yeah. Pro Football Focus has Bryce Betcher as the top graded linebacker in the country after 4 weeks of playing college football. He has been graded out through the first three games at 89.5 in their player impact on the game rankings. So this goes on to not just because Pro Football Focus, their rankings, by the way, they're very misleading because they don't know. They're not taking into account full scheme what guys are actually being asked to do in each certain instance. They just grade based on what they believe the assignment is, the impact that you're making on the game. Betcher is number one in the country, though. And this is a guy that was seen as a depth and rotational player throughout his entire career at Oregon, being a walk-on guy who earned his right. And he has turned into one of the best impact players on this entire defense. Hell, on the entire football team for Oregon, offensive or defensively, with the amount of plays that he's made this season.
We were looking at these, I want to say last week, and I was like, hey, Betcher's up here on this list, because we were kind of going through the different rankings of defensive players in the old Pac-12 is kind of a joke. And Betcher being up there was a shock, but not really, because of what you've seen from him and kind of what we saw from him last year. Him being good isn't surprising. Him being this good is surprising.
I think a lot of it is stylistically the teams that they've seen in the first three games
kind
as well.
Kind of funnels things towards his style of play.
Yeah, it is even like a run-heavy team, Big Ten style. That plays more into a guy like Justin Jacobs, who the Iowa transfer, and Jeffrey Bossa being dinged up has also added more snaps for Bryce Betcher as well. But in that rotation, when you're playing down that downhill style, it does favor those guys being in more than Betcher, because he is good in coverage. He is an athlete. I mean, hell, he's a Gold Glove winner as an outfielder for the Oregon baseball team. But with and when you look at stylistically what Idaho, Boise State, and Oregon State, although Oregon State and Boise State are both run-first teams, stylistically, their offenses fit having Betcher in more than they do having your run pluggers in. But he's been really good at both. I mean, hell, the first two plays of the Oregon State game kind of signify exactly why Betcher is a good fit stylistically against Oregon State, and that he almost intercepted the very first pass of the game and then knocked down the second pass of the game, right?
He's one of those. It's kind of funny. I was having this discussion with somebody the other day about tweeners in the NBA, and we actually started talking about tweeners in the NFL. What used to be kind of a cursed phrase is actually kind of a celebrated thing now because of the diversity of the game, the style, stylistically, how different certain teams can play.
Yeah.
And that's true in the NBA, the NFL, college football. Everybody says, you know, everybody does the same stuff. Sure, but everybody does it with a different flavor. Some use garlic, some use a little pepper, some will use a little paprika. And the ability to have somebody who can kind of go through all of that, because Boettcher's not your, you know, throwback in the middle or even on the edge linebacker, but he's also not somebody who is foreign in space. Yeah. So he's somebody you saw last year come off the edge in blitzes and be disrupted in the backfield. Like if you have him in a run gap, you're not afraid of him getting absolutely blown up and blown off the ball by a lineman on a pull or something along those lines. And if he's in space, you trust that he can make a play.
Which puts him in a really interesting position because he's a tweener. I mean, this is a guy who was a 13th round draft pick by the Houston Astros mm-hmm. this past summer in the Major League Baseball draft, and now he's coming in playing at Oregon and playing at such an incredibly high level that you sit there
look at some NFL tape.
But the idea, though, is where does he play mm-hmm. in the NFL? Because he's 6'2", 225 yeah. is what he's listed at. I would venture to guess he is probably 225, probably about like program height. He's probably like 6'1".
Sure.
Ish.
We've seen so many of those safeties though that have gone to those jack and kind of,
it would have to be a specific yes. position mm-hmm. in a specific system.
What was the Simmons big time linebacker or safety coming out yeah. and moved down to linebacker
Clemson
yeah
Justin Simmons.
Now he obviously did fail for other reasons, but like, you're seeing more of those guys. USC had Taylor Mays was another guy who was in that kind of same vein who kind of played that in between, and he fizzled out for
also,
other reasons.
You're saying a lot of guys that were drafted really high.
Yeah, but also.
But haven't really worked out.
Guys that, for non-football reasons, yeah. didn't work out.
I think with Boettcher, it's interesting because he is an inside linebacker. He's an interior linebacker. He's only at 225 pounds. Mm-hmm. You're going to have more lead in your pencil to do that. And he is not quick enough to play in the back end of a defense now, especially with what we're seeing safeties do in yeah. the NFL now in coverage. So it would have to be very specific to where he's at.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, or you put 20 pounds on him and you say, all right, be that downhill
guy. Play at 240, yeah.
You know, but there could be a team that says, and look, we've seen this before. Guys make careers off of special teams. Mm-hmm. This is a guy who loves special teams. His thought process on special teams, which he's on almost all of them, is why wouldn't you? It's okay.
You get to play.
You're looking at a guy like Brendan Schooler in New England, mm-hmm. who, a former Oregon player, went to Arizona. They're saying he's going to be the next Slater in New England, like a guy who's going to be there for 15 years, be a special teams just dynamo. Like, maybe that is a path that he wants to go. But again, here's the tough spot. Brendan Schooler wasn't drafted in the 13th round of the Major League Baseball draft,
where you can get some guaranteed money that's in your pocket real quick.
It's crazy.
It's interesting because if he does, let's say he is a high-level special teams guy and he gets put on a team, drafted by a team that's like a 3-3-5 team, where he becomes a depth quasi tweener, you know, or a guy that can yep. get out there in situational football.
Third down, he'd be great to yeah. play linebacker on third down.
And that's what I kind of wonder, like, is that enough of a draw for him if he continues to have this kind of success this year?
Yeah.
I played against a guy in college by the name of Caden Ellis. He's now the starting linebacker with the Falcons. His first couple years in the NFL, because he's kind of built the same way as Bryce. He was a skinnier guy in college. Played middle backer, but then he also moved around, and he used his first 2 years to basically be on special teams while he bulked up yep. so that he could bulk up in the right way.
Season, baby!
That could be something that Bryce does as well. Also, I don't know this for a fact, but it's just something that I've created in my own dumb brain.
All right.
Bryce Boettcher is the fastest and best cover guy to ever wear a neck roll. No one has worn a neck roll at yeah. the middle linebacker position.
He wears the butterfly
and covered
collar.
Better mm-hmm. than Bryce Boettcher.
Yeah. That's an interesting move.
Vancouver Ford's text line says he needs to get rid of the neck roll. I disagree.
Disagree wholeheartedly.
Strong disagree. Yeah. If you can do both, baby.
Yeah, it's like until it negatively affects you, keep rocking
yes.
it. Yeah. Cuz it makes him look a lot bigger than 225.
Not only that, those butterfly collars are not like the cowboy collars that we grew up with.
Yeah.
Like that I could get my arms slightly above my head. The cowboy collar was very, very prohibitive on movement. The butterfly one, not nearly as much.
He's really damn good right yeah. now. And he fits Lanning system perfectly, too.
Because they can deploy him a million different ways.
Also, we've seen this with a lot of the guys at Georgia where, you know, I said this when Lanning was hired, and we haven't talked really much about it this season, but Dan Lanning is 53 and a third. with his linebackers, mm-hmm. guys that can cover from sideline to sideline. And Betcher does a phenomenal job of that. And look, being graded the highest impact linebacker in the country, it's not too bad. That's a good way to go. That's a really good way to go.
I like it.
What if he went actual neck roll, though? Like foam neck roll. Get rid of the butterfly collar. You know where they used to attach it, like above the jersey, too? Yeah. Maybe would that be better?
Bo rocked one.
No shirt underneath, jersey rolled up to about belly buttons.
Yeah. Yes. The Bo Jackson.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
Huh. Yeah.
That cowboy collar, or the old neck roll, used to just flop all over the place.
Dang.
Like, what is the point of that?
All right.
Him and I think Lyle Alzado was another one for there.
Boy, you have named a lot of steroid users in this segment.
Yeah.
Like, you've just gone down this. Like,
look.
Every name that's come out of your mouth has been a steroid guy.
Yeah. Guess what, man? Neck rolls, steroids. They go together.
Latimer never tested positive for steroids. I just want that out there. He was only assumed.
Look, I was a guy that wore...
Assumed? I seen the video of him in the bathroom stall, Will.
Show me the positive test, Dusty.
Here, I'll give you one.
All right, true.
I took steroids and I wore a neck roll. Like, they go hand in hand.
Yeah, and that was just in everyday life. Danny was just doing that, walking down the street wearing a neck roll for protecting. You never knew.
You never knew, man. Terry Tate, man, he inspired a lot.
You never knew. All right, Pirates are Scumbags next on The Fan.
This is Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and Portland's sports leader, 1080, The Fan.
I go work like a doctor. When I rock the mic, you got to like the way I operate. I make miracles happen just for rapping. I'm so lyrically
bold. Pittsburgh Pirates are Scumbags.
On the scene, mean.
You know that?
I was a fan of an NL Central team, sure.
Nah, this is even more. Like, this is also, this is along lines of the Oakland A's bad. Okay? Mm. Like, Oakland A's, we go John J. Fisher. You're screwing over your team and your fan base. Another team that has phenomenal uniforms, a classic brand,
a beautiful baseball stadium.
With one of the best.
No.
John J. Fisher would love to field a loser in that ballpark. Tell you what.
Right?
He would love to field a loser there. And a team that has giant statues. Remember that story?
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. The Pirates, they make gigantic statues. Just the opposite of what the 76ers do just across the state in Pennsylvania there, where they have tiny statues. The Roberto Clemente statue is enormous. How tall is that thing? Roberto Clemente. Clemente Day statue is height. It is 12 feet tall. That's a good statue.
Yeah, that's not an Allen Iverson statue.
Yeah, you need to get yourself a 12-foot statue.
It's not a school for ants.
No. It's like twice the size of Roberto Clemente. They're like, damn, he was big. No wonder he was so good.
And look, the Pirates, even all of their alternate looks are good.
They're great.
Like, it's just a great, like, Pittsburgh cornered the market on yellow and black.
Yeah, and a song, too. Well, they really screwed this one up. Because not only does this guy have a great name, he's got the build that fits his name. Rowdy Tellez was their first baseman. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And he's as rowdy as you think he is.
He is a bundle of joy. He's festively plump, large man, got a great beard. He just looks very Pittsburgh. He was DFA'd, designated for assignment, the other day. And the reason why is absolutely ridiculous. He was set a $200,000 bonus if he reached 425 plate appearances this season. On Tuesday, when he was DFA'd, he had 421 plate appearances on the season. It was right after the team had been officially eliminated from playoff contention, and so they DFA'd him and did not give him his 425 plate appearances.
Yes.
For $200,000.
Yeah, and their general manager, Ben Charrington, told reporters earlier that it had absolutely nothing to do with his bonus.
Yes, it did. It had everything to do with his bonus.
Just, you shouldn't even take questions on it, because everything you say is a lie.
Yeah.
And because every single team in every single sport, NBA, MLB, NFL, everyone knows likely, unlikely metrics, all of them. Mo Harkless had the worst kept secret in the NBA.
He didn't shoot for a month.
That
rocks.
Which is great.
It was insane.
It was great.
Draymond Green was yelling, just don't cover him because he's not going to shoot.
And we all knew because it was, he had, what was the percentage?
37%.
37% from three. And he was like at 37 and a half, wasn't he?
It was like 37.2.
Really?
He shot, like, I want to say he shot, I did the math on this one time. I think he shot like four threes over the final, like, 2.5 or 3 weeks. It was like, there were ones where, like, no one was around and, like, he had to shoot it.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh my God. But it was just, it wasn't. So everyone knows.
So
everyone knows these things. For them to pretend that that wasn't the case, and this is them just being cheap. Good organizations, when this stuff happens, when this stuff is close, remember your despicable franchise, the Patriots, Tom Brady made sure Gronk had one more catch in a game that did not matter.
Yeah, it's a dirty secret about the NFL is that, like, you'll have players at the end of the season, they'll, quarterbacks will go into the huddle and be like, hey,
anybody need,
what do we need here? And they will pump the ball to players who need their bonus contract.
Because it's $1 million or it's $800,000. Like, $200,000 for four more plate appearances is insane.
This is where I think that their GM, even speaking about anything, misses the mark, because he was asked about, like, hey, is this the reason why you did it? And he was like, no, absolutely not. Zero factor in that. And then he was also asked, do you think that this is going to affect you guys trying to get free agents in the future? And he said, no, I'm not concerned. If you're asking me about the optics going forward and how it affects business and things like that, no. Contracts are negotiated in good faith. Then they live out. We feel like we gave Rowdy lots of opportunity here this year. To his credit, he fought through some difficult times earlier in the year and fought his way out of it, had periods of success and periods of frustration. This was just where we got to in the season. Had nothing to do with where the plate appearances were lined up.
Why would you DFA a guy 3 days left in the season?
Yeah, bring those young guys up, bro.
What are you doing? What gain is there? Tell me, what strategic thing are you doing that you're accomplishing where somebody gets 8 plate appearances?
Yeah.
That's proprietary.
Yeah,
that's exactly what that sounds like. It sounds like somebody who's a terrible human being.
Yeah. All right. Well, was he bad? No.
He was slightly below average.
Two, four, six. He was seventh in batting average.
He was fourth in home runs.
Fourth in home runs. And he was
third in RBI.
Third in RBI on the season. I mean,
What the hell is the point of DFAing a guy with 3 days left in the season?
He was fourth on the roster in total bases on the season, too.
That happens all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. A guy who's very clearly in your top five most productive players in the season, they very, very, very often get DFA'd and with 3 days left in the season and a financial bonus on the line.
All right. Well, maybe he was really slumping. Oh, no. In August, he hit 300. In July, he hit 297. In June, he hit 333. He slumped early.
And then he came on late.
And then he came on late. He was 1-for-5 in the month of September. But, that's wrong. He was not 1-for-5. He was 5-for-43 in September. He was not hitting well in September, but you were eliminated from postseason contention. You just wanted to save yourself.
That's what I'm saying. Like, what point does this serve?
Yeah.
You're not getting...
He scored one run.
Like, you're not getting anything out of this other than saving money.
Yeah.
Just say...
If you're going to be scummy,
just say it with your chest.
Yeah.
Say that you're a scumbag franchise.
Yeah, man.
John Fisher,
that's a bummer,
for what it is, has fully embraced the fact that he's a scumbag.
Yeah. I think they should have said the quiet part out loud, too, which is we're not going to sign anybody in free agency anyways.
Yes. Go full White Sox with it.
Yeah. I mean,
like, baseball is so littered with terrible ownership. And it's not even like drawing a line of like, they're mildly cheap. It's oh my God, this is egregious. What are you doing? Yeah. And look, baseball has done a great job the last couple of years of reinventing the game and speeding it up and getting more people involved and like doing things that impact the game. They need to get these guys out. They need to get them out.
They do.
They need to find, like, they need to go hire Baxter Holmes from ESPN and have him go find dirt on these guys.
There is one common denominator that is plaguing baseball and continues to plague baseball, and it is the poor ownership in Oakland, in Cincinnati,
Chicago,
in Pittsburgh, in Chicago, on the south side of Chicago.
Miami.
I mean, it is, you want to wonder why you're not more popular? I mean,
Arizona.
Come on.
I mean, how many good owners are there in baseball?
Well, there's aren't good any owners up north. Win.
Yeah, no, Seattle. Stay Seattle. Yeah, it's a big problem.
It's tough.
It's a big problem. It's hard in the streets.
Look, I had a different worst day on the web, but some breaking news out of Los Angeles is going to make us do a little bit of a shift. UCLA's baseball program has been thrown off their field and barred by a judge for failure to take care of a legal precedent that has been a long time coming as it pertains to veteran care. We'll get to that and more coming up here on Danny and Dusty. First, here's Big Will Betts, the Sports Center update.
It's time for today's worst day on the web with Danny and Dusty on Odyssey and 1080 The Fan.
Man, that sucks!
An interesting story from the LA Times came across my timeline about an hour ago, and the headline was pretty astronomical. UCLA baseball loses its baseball field. And I was like, that's interesting. I wonder what's going on there.
Not great.
And they were being locked down. It says, for now, in a lawsuit over its use of veteran land. And I went, oh, let's take a look at this. It turns out that a 388-acre parcel of land in West Los Angeles has been for over 100 years divvied up, split out, and taken advantage of by multiple entities, including two schools and an oil drilling facility, rig, whatever you want to call it, for land that was originally designated as a full-time home for disabled veterans, dating back to 1888.
Oh.
Yes.
1888.
A land deed from 1888.
Oh, goodness gracious.
So there's a lot to this. U.S. federal judge David Carter is my new hero for the time being.
All right.
Because what he has laid down is absolutely incredible. So this is apparently the UCLA chancellor, Darnell Hunt, has been kind of avoiding these meetings. And the judge basically said, if this dude doesn't show up, I'm going to lock everyone out. I'm going to put a cordon around the entire thing, and you won't be able to get anywhere near it.
Yeah, and this has been a long time coming. This is this first came to the Department of Veteran Affairs' misuse of the land in 2013.
So that's okay. 11 years.
Now, that was, when we think about it, that was 32 years after they built Jackie Robinson Stadium. Jackie Robinson Stadium has been on this land since 1981, okay, when they built the stadium. 32 years later, this court case is uncovered where they're sitting there going, wait a minute, this land wasn't supposed to be given to UCLA to build a baseball stadium.
And from what it sounds like, from the cursory research I have, it was some backroom dealings of, hey, let me, you know, I'll you know, grease your hand, you'll grease mine, and we'll all come out ahead of this. And who gets screwed over?
Yeah.
The veterans. And the chancellor for UCLA showed up apparently late last night, 7 p.m., and tried to kind of, hey, I'm here. Ah.
Oh, wait, he was serious.
Yeah, no, he's serious. And the judge said, nah, dog, too late. And ooh. UCLA is now barred from those facilities. He has sat down lawyers for the Veterans Affairs, from UCLA, from the Brentwood School, and from the oil company, and basically told them all, if you don't come up with a plan for this 388-acre parcel of land where it predominantly factors into the well-being of disabled veterans, kiss the land goodbye.
Yeah. And it should be noted that they have the West Los Angeles Veteran Affairs Medical Center.
Mm-hmm.
Is right
it's
next
a part
to
on the
stadium.
Yes.
It's a large plot of land, but what the big issue here is that the intentions when they built the stadium on this land where that, all right, what else are we going to do here?
Yes.
There's going to be a boost to the veterans. Nobody was displaced by this.
No, because they never had the facility up to begin with.
But this is the hairy part of mm-hmm. this whole situation is that at the time that it was built, the land was not in use. It had been vacant for several years. And then they said, okay, well, as you mentioned, 1888 is when this piece of land, parcel of land was set aside.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that point it became, all right, we've gone almost 100 years now yeah. without using this land. You guys can build a baseball stadium on it. Well, now we are seeing that the Department of Veteran Affairs is starting to take things more seriously now than they did.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, 43 years ago when they gave them this land to build on. And they're saying, well, we now need the space for it. And the judge came over the top in 2013 and said, in a ruling back in 2013, said, all right, we're going to stop short of ordering you off the property. But they did leave it open that if in the future that land does need to be used, this could become a problem for UCLA. So this is not something where, like, the chancellor who's been avoiding these court proceedings, this isn't like it's not something that hasn't been on his radar, because we've been sitting here for a decade now
trying to work through this.
Of this could be an issue that you're going to have to be ready for, and they were just trying to avoid it at all costs.
Yes. The interesting thing here, the Brentwood School, they are represented by an attorney named Lewis Skip Miller. He said that they proposed giving back 5 acres of its 22-acre lease for housing.
Oh.
Which, that's awful generous of them. The judge then came out and said he was not going to accept a trade-off of 5 acres for 17, causing Miller to apologize if he had created the impression that the land was the school's to give back.
All right.
So basically, this judge has been in there smacking lawyers around for the past couple of days saying, no, 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 you're failing to understand the situation, gentlemen. It's not your land.
You want to know something about the Brentwood School?
Hmm.
Good Lord. For K through 5,
mm-hmm.
it is $45,000 per year to go to school at the Brentwood School. For 6 through 12, $53,300 per year to go to school. Wherever will they go? What will they do without that? Their enrollment right now is 1,200.
So it's the most prestigious freaking school in West LA.
Go to public school.
Notable alumni.
Unbelievable.
Include Andrew Breitbart.
The Breitbart news guy?
That's right. David Frost, baseball executive. Goodness gracious. This is a very long. Jennifer Grant. Jonah Hill went there. Jonah Hill. Super bad.
Not the same high school as he played.
Mm-mm.
I would imagine.
No. The entire band of Maroon 5.
Wow.
Is that where they met each other?
I would imagine.
Yeah.
So they're all rich kids.
Fred and Ben Savage went there. Katherine Schwarzenegger, Patrick Schwarzenegger. Yeah, there's a lot of...
Super hoity-toity,
yeah.
Big money.
Yeah. Did big time money.
Maid's kid go there?
I mean, everyone...
Oh, come on. He went to public school.
No. I mean, the money there, that's more than any... You know, public university yearly fee.
It's very expensive to go to school there.
So basically, the judges said, "We'll fill your sand." He said, "We will fill your pool with sand."
I would love to see that.
To make sure you can't use it.
I would love to see that. And then they get it from a beach, and then the judge gets sued, and then we just get more lawsuits there. That'd be perfect. Yeah, Brentwood School, man.
There's also the Bridgeland Resources LLC, which is the oil drilling operation on the east side of the campus. Remember, La Brea Tar Pits, oil, that's actually in L.A., weird thing. But the judge also rejected a proposal by the attorney, Ernest Guadiana, to swap an acre and a half of its property and increase royalties from 2.5% up to 5.5% based on the price of oil.
Oh, so what I'm gathering here is tuition is going up at the Brentwood School. The oil company, oil's about to get more expensive, and UCLA baseball tickets about to get way more expensive.
Here's something that's really interesting, too. The judge said, oh, that's interesting. You want to give us a 3% increase. Carter demanded that Bridgeland offer 51% of its gross revenue from the wells.
Yes, let's go. Because support the troops.
What?
Let's go.
They're making money on land that isn't theirs.
This is going to be wild.
He says, Guadiana said, do I hear 51%? That figure would put the operation out of business. Well, you're operating on land that isn't yours, and you've made profits for 100 years or longer. Sorry.
Wait, they've been there for 100 years?
Some version of the oil well has been there for a while.
Golly. Yeah.
But the more I go into this, the more this judge is my hero.
Yeah, this is great.
This is fantastic.
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic, because what all three of these entities, what are they going to do? They're going to figure it out, because
they'll find a baseball stadium somewhere in L.A.
Well, no,
I don't think they can do that.
I don't even think they're going to do that. I think they're going to figure this out, and significant portions of proceeds and money is going to go back to Veterans Affairs.
Yeah, as it should.
And the reason why is, how much unused land is there in the L.A. metro area?
Not a lot, especially in Brentwood. It's a very valuable piece of land that they're getting there.
So where are they going to go?
Mm.
Nowhere. And what they're going to do is...
Yeah, you can't have the Brentwood School not in Brentwood.
Yeah. So they're going to figure out...
The Brentwood School of Hollywood?
Yeah. Those teachers that have, like, probably $1 million salaries won't be having those anymore.
All right.
Love to see it. Yeah. Funnel that money to disabled veterans, man.
Let's go.
I could not love this anymore.
It's awesome.
I could not love this anymore.
And
shout out this judge, man.
It does fit UCLA acclimating themselves to Big Ten life, right? Like, Big Ten doesn't care about baseball, so, you know, just,
it's
you're
whatever.
Out.
Yeah. Back it up.
And they will have the smallest, it's a very small baseball stadium, too.
To begin with.
It's only 1,800 seats. Like, they didn't take, like, a large portion of this land.
No.
They took UCLA's baseball took a very small portion of it. But
they
also
knew
this was coming.
Like a 10-acre training facility and everything else that kind of goes with it.
All right.
It's like, oops.
Let's go.
So this is a story that I'm going to keep in my back pocket and kind of follow along with, because I want to see where this ends up.
I love the oil company being like, well, what are we ever going to do?
Yeah, we'll give you 3% more.
No.
It's like, no, dog, you're actually going to give us 48% more.
That's great.
That's such a...
I see your 3% and I raise you 48% more.
That's just... fantastic stuff. Love every bit of it. Like I said, I hope this judge doesn't like come out like with hookers and blow kind of a deal, but it's like
probably will.
Yeah. But right now, my hero.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and you also got to think, though, what is this oil company going to do to that land, and how usable is that land after drilling on it for
like 80 years?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
probably not going to be the best place to live.
Eh, well, you know. Well, you know what? Keep it in L.A. and talk about more news in the weird world of transfer portals.
Ooh, yeah. Let's do it.
Well, there's a transfer portal, or at least a redshirt news, coming from a former 5-star recruit out of USC, and the disruption that is going to cause and the ripple effect that this may have throughout college football. That and more here on Danny and Dusty, Danny the Fan.
Danny and Dusty on the Fan.
USC defensive lineman Bear Alexander has decided to cut his season short and take a redshirt year with the Trojans.
Bum, bum, bum. NIL?
There was an issue back and forth about where he was going to be in the depth chart earlier this summer, or I should say this in the spring, where he was going to enter the transfer portal and did not.
Yeah. Look, Bear Alexander, this should not be a surprise to anybody. Because Bear Alexander was going to transfer earlier in the offseason. He also is a transfer king. He went to 4 different high schools in 4 years.
And committed and decommitted to Georgia before decommitting and committing back to USC and then came back again. So the man hops around.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been around a time or two.
And again, he is a 5-star talent. He is a very, very, very talented player. But this is the horror, you know, case that you hear about, whether it's Jaden Rashada or Bear Alexander or whoever else is just quite literally chasing money. There are plenty of guys who are, their sole purpose in life is just chasing NIL money.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And like this guy is, so in prior to this year, he'd gone to 6 schools in 6 years. 2022, enrolled at University of Georgia, played with the Bulldogs as a freshman, transferred to USC in April of 2023. Prior to that, he played at Skyline High School, IMG Academy, mm-hmm. Ryan High School, Terrell High School.
And those are all, like, cream of the crop schools.
He went six schools in 6 years. Mm-hmm. That is crazy.
That's insane.
And now he'll be on seven in eight years. And look, I don't know if he's done yet. There's nothing to stop him. He could go 8 for 9. And there are just some guys who are bouncing around guys. Maybe they're getting bad advice. Maybe they've just been fed something their entire life, telling them how great they are. For the idea that this is some indictment on USC, I don't think that it is, because of what we've outlined with Bear Alexander and his jumping around. But what it does is it says that USC takes a hit to their depth.
And it's a spot that particular position group is the one that was their one where, like, we're a little thin there.
You are thin on the defensive line. We saw it against Michigan just last week.
Anthony Lucas is banged up, and you're like,
he played a lot of snaps against Michigan as well. And that's where this one kind of hurts, is that, look, we've talked about this. USC has bolstered their defense on every level, and they have bolstered both of their offensive and defensive lines this year.
But
they have looked a lot better. They are not deep.
No.
They are not deep by any stretch of the imagination. And today, Lincoln Riley refused to take questions on it. And what was interesting, this popped up yesterday, mm-hmm. Bear Alexander's transfer, yesterday evening. Lincoln Riley was asked about Bear Alexander on Tuesday afternoon, and this was his answer.
He played over a third of the game, you know, so, I mean, people want to act like the guy's not playing snaps. He's doing a good job for us out here. He's getting better. There's no story there. I mean, I know you guys are looking for one. Like, there's no story there. The guy's out here working hard. He's improving. He's in a new system with a new coach. He's getting better. I think he's going to continue to get better. It should be hard to play D-line at USC. Like, it ought to be kind of hard. Like, if it's not, it wasn't hard last year, you know, and that's why we weren't very good up there. You know what? We're pretty decent up there, and it's hard, and the margins are thin. So sometimes it's not what somebody's not doing. It's competitive, and there's tough decisions to make every week. But if you see guys out on the field, then we are excited about what they're doing on the practice field and believe that they give us a chance to win. You know, go look at the last snap of the game, see who's on the field. And so there's no story there. Guy's getting better. He needs to keep improving, and I'm confident that he will with the coaching that he has and the room that we have in there.
There is a story there.
There is a story there. And look, clearly a reporter in L.A. had a line to Bear Alexander's agent, because here's the thing. I said to you, was it Monday? Was it Monday or Tuesday? Bear Alexander was walking out to the field. And I was like, God, Bear is a huge, huge, huge dude. Because they have their little trip from the locker room across the street to the practice facility. And I was like, man. And he was. He did go through practice. And he did look good. And like, everybody was talking about how great Bear looked. So there's a lot of stuff here, man, where it's like,
there is more to Bear Alexander's story.
Yeah, it's a mess. And this is obviously a USC isolated incident with it as it pertains to Bear Alexander. But this also highlights what we talked about yesterday with Matthew Sluka. And I wonder, look, this was happening around college football already, but it wasn't happening with guys who impact your roster. Like, it wasn't your starting quarterback or a guy who could be on your starting defensive line. It was the third or fourth running back. It was the sixth DB. It's your fifth wide receiver. Guys who, you know, a coach said, hey, if you come here, you know, we'll get you some opportunities, and they got you into camp, and you just couldn't hang it. You couldn't hack. Those guys did do this, and they have done that for the last 2 years. This is a change. This whole, like, I'm not getting mine at the highest of high levels, I'm out.
I think that this is a unique situation, though.
You think so?
Guy's gone to six schools in 6 years.
On the heels of Sluka, though, I do kind of raise an eyebrow of, like, does this become not a landmark case, but, like, is this And it's not going to be run rampant.
I mean, these two are separate issues. I mean, this isn't an NIL situation. This is a guy who's addicted to transferring, who knows what's going on behind the scenes in his home life, where he's getting the direction that, you know, this is going to be the good option for you. Because I could tell you right now, it's going to be a red flag for whoever picks him up. Because first red flag, you left Georgia. Second red flag is you left USC because you were getting playing time, and you got playing time at both of those places, right? This is not a, it's the place you are. This is becomes a you problem. And it also opens up the, you know, Lincoln Riley's adversarial approach to the media and saying, this is a non-story. There's nothing to talk about here. Well, obviously there was. And he's got to figure that part out. Like, he got out of his own way with the defense. That was a massive step forward.
And then I never thought he would.
Now it is, you've got to get out of your own way with the media. Because that's the thing. That there's plenty of ways that you can shoot that down without saying that this is a non-story. Mm-hmm. You guys are digging. When, obviously, the reporter knew there was a story here.
That's why he asked. Yeah. And now you look like an idiot.
You sit there and you say, he played great snaps for us against Michigan. His plan for us is to continue to be in our rotation, be a significant part of what we do. And then you can just say, that's it right there. Then it becomes on him to say, there's no story here. What are you guys fishing for? Well, this.
Yeah.
You know, like this.
Clearly somebody was talking to an agent.
Yeah. He had a great day of practice yesterday. He had a great day of practice today. He's been in our rotation. We'll continue to be in our rotation. Then he decides to leave. That's on him.
It's tough.
Yep. It's tough.
It's a terrible spot to be in. You know, it's not a terrible spot to be in.
But
heading into football.
Week 4.
It's pick time coming up here in hour number 3 on Danny and Dusty, 1080 The Fan.